Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Sunday. Juana Juanita Flores, 65, left to be with the Angels on Saturday, October 2nd. Juanita was born in El Paso to Jose Reyes Mesa and Anadina Castillo Mesa on September 28, 1956. She is preceded in death by her parents, son Gabriel Rodriguez, brother Joe Mesa, sister Maria Elena Ibarra. Those left to cherish her memory are her children, Jesse U. Rodriguez, Christy Rodriguez, and Jose Luis Rodriguez. Sisters Nora Mesa Jasso, Lisa Mesa, and Sandra Mesa. 16 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held on Monday, October 11th from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary being recited at 7 p.m. at Martinez Funeral Home outside chapel. Mass will be celebrated on Tuesday, October 12th at 10 a.m. at St. Joseph's Catholic Church, followed by interment at Ector County Cemetery, the Odessa II section. Services entrusted to Martinez Funeral Home. Larry Allison Myers, 72, of Odessa, passed away on October 6th at his home, surrounded by his loved ones. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on October 16th at First Presbyterian Church of Odessa, with Reverend Jimmy Braswell officiating. Sunset Memorial Gardens is handling the arrangements. Larry was born in Dallas to Nelson and Ruth Myers on March 23, 1949. Larry is preceded in death by his mother and father, his brother Jerry Myers, and his sister Phyllis Easley. Larry is survived by his wife Diane Myers and his children Jennifer Myers and Courtney and Kenneth Hawley. He has 5 grandchildren and many honorary children and grandchildren. He is also survived by his brothers and sisters, Randy and Beverly Myers, and Brenda and Daryl Bryles. In lieu of flowers, Larry and his family request donations be made in his name at Family Promise of Odessa. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Sandra K. Allen, 67, of Odessa, died Monday, October 4th, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Richard Flores, 56, died Monday, October 4th, in Fort Worth. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Manuel Gonzalez, 71, of Odessa, died Friday, October 1st, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m., Monday, October 11th, at St. Elizabeth Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Mary Lorraine Jones, 83, of Odessa, died Tuesday, October 5th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. on Friday, October 15th, at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Burial will follow at the Peaceful Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Ruben Munoz Jr., 63, of Odessa, died Thursday, September 21st, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Friday, October 16th, at La Margarita Fairgrounds in Odessa. Burial will be held privately at a later date. Father Frank Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Billy Chad Lincoln, 50, died Wednesday, October 6th, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Jennifer Hernandez Lanez, 37, died Thursday, September 23rd, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Gloria Becerril Madrid, 78, of Odessa, died Monday, October 4th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Mariano Navarrete Jr., 74, died Wednesday, October 6th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Edgar Rodriguez, 35, died Monday, October 4th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Francisca Kika Torres, 67, died Tuesday, October 5th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, October 11th. Doctor-patient relationships important. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Relationships between physicians and patients have to be a two-way street, but it's not always something that's talked about. Dr. Sarah Safarzadeh Amiri, dual board certified in internal medicine and pediatrics, recently presented Foundations of a Great Physician-Patient Relationship on an Odessa College Facebook Live broadcast. The physician-patient relationship is important to the patient and the physician, she said. 79% of physicians consider patient relationships to be the most satisfying thing about their work, according to a 2014 Physicians Foundation survey. As with any relationship, physician-patient relationships require both parties to be actively engaged and invested. Amiri, who is with the Odessa Regional Medical Center, said the keys to any healthy relationship are communication, respect, and trust. This also holds true for the physician-patient relationship, she said. The relationship is one of the main factors that influences adherence to treatment. Amiri said impaired relationships can lead to poor outcomes because the patient may feel unheard, disrespected, or out of the partnership with their physician. It's important to find a doctor you feel comfortable with and trust, she noted. Amiri listed ways to maximize your appointment. Be prepared for your appointment. Prioritize health issues to discuss. Bring a companion or advocate to your appointment when necessary. Be honest with your physician. Be sure you understand your care plan. Communicate with your physician. Use patient portal. Follow your care plan. If a doctor seems to be paying attention to a computer screen instead of the patient, Amiri said the patient should ask to see the screen. Also, become involved to review their records and ask questions of the doctor and call for attention. If you have something sensitive to discuss, speak up and ask for your doctor's full attention. Asked if the pandemic has made doctor-patient relationships more difficult as far as patients having certain ideas and not believing their doctors as much as they used to, Amiri said she didn't think that was necessarily so. Quote, I think for me, what this pandemic has shown, just like with any other areas that we look at, is that it's brought into light these deficiencies that already existed in the system. So it's just this major event that has occurred that has impacted our world, our country, our healthcare system, and we're finding all these difficulties. These difficulties already existed in the system where it's just been magnified. I don't think it's just COVID. It could have been anything else. It could have been any other kind of thing, Amiri said. She added that trust is a big factor in the doctor-patient relationship. Quote, where does trust come from? You can't just have trust if you don't have a relationship. Then goes back to having that relationship, and so I think that's what it brings about is, do we have a relationship with our patients? What kind of a relationship does healthcare have with the community, with the patients that it's supposed to serve, and vice versa? I think that's what it magnifies, Amiri said. She added that she is passionate about primary care. Quote, I was in primary care practice for 7 years, and recently I moved into a physician advisor role within the hospital here at Odessa Regional, but I am very much of a primary care physician advocate and patient advocate, and community work is very important to me, she added. That is one reason why the relationship aspect is important to her. The physician advisor is a recent role aimed at advocating for physicians, patients, and case management. It is meant to help move things along as smoothly as possible for the benefit of the patient and the benefit of the system as a whole, Amiri said. Amiri said, you won't last long if you don't have passion for patient education. She noted that different physicians have different personalities. Some doctors are more outgoing and others not as much. Amiri says that doesn't mean they don't care about the patient relationship and about your health care. Their personality may perfectly match with the patient. She advises prospective patients to ask themselves what they need from a doctor before choosing one, because you may not like that one that friends and family think is best for you. You have to pick a physician that matches your personality, that gives you a good vibe, Amiri said. She added that she doesn't think there's a perfect physician, so you have to find one that satisfies what you're looking for and what's important to you. For all patients, it's important that they feel like the doctor listens to you and that you are heard. Amiri said some patients want to know all the details of the diagnosis and treatment. Other patients trust their physician's judgment and want to be told what they should do and what medicine to take, for example. It's recommended that doctors give patients a summary of their visit, telling them what medications are prescribed and any diagnostic workups that they need to get, for instance. Having an advocate with you is important, she said. Amiri noted that it's important that patients answer medical questions honestly. Tell the doctor if a medicine didn't work for you last time, or if you can't check your blood sugar 3 times a day, and ask for an alternative. Quote, I think a lot of times patients, and again it's just based on the relationship, is the relationship of power. It appears that the physician is in a position of power, and you're not in a position of power, so you don't want to disrespect them. You don't want to not listen to them. You don't want to argue with them, or you feel like you can't. You know, say things freely, but you have to in order for them to be able to help you, in order to build a relationship of trust. They're invested in your medical care, but then they also realize that this is a partnership. The physician understands that, so just because they tell you to do something, it doesn't mean that you're just going to do it, no questions asked. So feel free to ask that question, feel empowered to do that. And I think that's important, Amiri said. Domestic Violence Prevention. The story was written by Carol A. Keats, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. I have mentioned before that my husband is a teacher. He made the comment to me the other day that he thinks the kids are trying for a record number of fights in a school this year. There have also been a huge number of articles in the news lately about an increase in violence toward healthcare providers and first responders in the last few years. Mass shootings plague our nation and have horrifically touched our community. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like things just keep getting more and more violent. Unfortunately, that tendency is showing in domestic violence as well. We know that in 2020, child abuse reporting decreased, but severe injuries and deaths related to child abuse increased. The experts feel this is largely because with kids not being in school, that safety mechanism and mandatory reporting suspected abuse by teachers and other school officials was not there. Domestic violence has seen a similar trend. Reporting overall is down, but severe injuries and deaths have increased. Fortunately, we have gotten our kids back in school, and that safety net to help with reporting suspected abuse, and with it, preventing many severe injuries and deaths, has been restored. But that is not the case with domestic violence, largely because the social isolation and economic pressures for many adults still exists, as it did at the beginning of the pandemic. The increase in domestic violence since the beginning of the pandemic is so severe that many of the experts and specialists who help victims of domestic violence are calling it the, quote, pandemic within the pandemic, end quote. Domestic violence incidents resulting in severe injury or death have increased by 8% since the lockdown orders were first issued in March 2020, according to the National Commission on COVID-19 and Criminal Justice. Even without the pandemic, domestic violence is a big problem in the United States. On average, 20 people every minute are physically abused by an intimate partner. That works to about 10 million people every year. One in four American women and one in nine American men experience severe intimate partner physical violence in their lifetime, and one in three women and one in four men have experienced some form of physical violence, for example, slapping, shoving, shaking, from an intimate partner. Intimate partner violence accounts for 15% of the violent crime in the U.S. It's not just the intimate partners who suffer when domestic violence occurs in a family. 72% of all murder suicides involve intimate partners, and 20% of the deaths related to intimate partner homicides are bystanders, people who tried to stop the violence. In 70% of homes with domestic violence by an intimate partner, there is also child abuse. Men who abuse their intimate partners are 6 times more likely to sexually abuse their children, and women who are abused are 2 times more likely to abuse their children. Globally, 275 million children each year witness violence firsthand at home. To me, the scariest statistic out there is the awful problem that many victims of domestic violence face is that they are 75% less likely to die if they stay in the abusive relationship. That statistic alone shows why it is so important to stop the cycle of violence with domestic abuse. It is quite literally a trap. Without intervention, it is increasingly difficult for victims to escape. Fortunately, here in the Permian Basin, we have a fantastic resource to help prevent domestic violence and assist victims in getting out of the trap of domestic violence. The Crisis Center of West Texas offers many domestic violence services, from emergency assistance with assistance with safety planning, shelter, and counseling, to helping friends and families learn about how they can help a victim. They accompany victims to the hospital and advocate with medical and law enforcement, and then later with the legal system. Their hotline number is 1-866-627-4747 if you are a victim of domestic violence and need help or need help for someone in your life. In the realm of prevention, they have education for nearly every facet of the community to teach people how to avoid the trap of domestic violence before it ever occurs. If you would like to host or are interested in receiving prevention education, please contact their Community Services Department at 432-333-2527. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 25,149 total cases, 504 deaths. Midland County, 27,462 total cases, 344 deaths. Texas, 4,129,189 total cases, 66,986 deaths. U.S. cases, 44,217,318 total confirmed cases, and 711,020 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Town hall meeting. U.S. Representative August Pfluger has scheduled a town hall at noon on Tuesday at the Copper Rose, 415 North Grant Avenue. The meeting is open to the public. For more information, call on-site Representative Monica Gonzalez-Malden at 432-331-9667. Odessa College will present the 14th OC Honors Luncheon on November 9th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center at 305 East 5th Street. Keynote speaker will be Jeffrey Canada. This year's honorees will be Lisa Wyman, Outstanding Individual, Julie Marshall, Outstanding Educator, La Margarita, Outstanding Business, Medical Center Health System, Outstanding Nonprofit, Rohith Saravanan, MD, Community Impact, and Wood Family, Virginia Chisholm, Hall of Fame Inductees. Sponsorship and tables are available. Online donations are also welcomed. Sponsorships from the luncheon will directly impact OC students through scholarships. These scholarships include the Student Success Scholarship, as well as scholarships for more specialized areas such as education, nursing, engineering, music, and more. To sponsor, purchase a table, to donate, or for more information, call 432-335-6648. Email foundation@odessa.edu or visit www.odessa.edu/OC Honors. Alan West, Texas GOP candidate, hospitalized with COVID-19. Tea Party firebrand Alan West, a candidate for the Republican nomination for governor of Texas, was hospitalized with COVID-19 on Sunday, but said that he's, quote, doing great, no complaints, I'm just relaxing, West told the Associated Press during a brief phone interview from a hospital in the Dallas suburb of Plano. He said he got a good night's rest and was awaiting the results of an early morning chest X-ray. West and his wife Angela West were diagnosed with the virus after attending a packed house fundraising event in Seabrook, Texas last week. He said Saturday that he is, quote, suspending in-person events until receiving an all-clear indication, end quote. Both Wests received monoclonal antibody treatments for COVID-19, and Angela, who was vaccinated against the virus, was released to go home, Alan West said on Twitter. The Republican candidate said he has not gotten the coronavirus vaccination and that doctors were worried Saturday about the lowered level of oxygen saturation in his blood. West said on Twitter Sunday that if elected governor, he would, quote, vehemently crush anyone forcing vaccine mandates in Texas. West is a former Texas Republican Party chair and Florida congressman. He announced in July that he would challenge Republican Governor Greg Abbott, who is running for a third term and has been endorsed by Donald Trump. West's announcement came a month after he resigned as chair of the Republican Party of Texas.
COVID vaccine okay for pregnant and breastfeeding women. To your good health for Saturday. Dear Dr. Roach, my daughter is still nursing her 10-month-old son. She decided to get the Pfizer vaccine and continue breastfeeding. Her doctor did not advise her against it. Do you have an opinion or more information about this matter? I've read that COVID antibodies are present in breast milk. Dr. Roach writes, COVID-19 vaccination is recommended for women who are breastfeeding. There is data to show that the vaccine is effective for the breastfeeding woman, but there is little data about the effect on the baby. It is true that breast milk does have antibodies to COVID-19, but how effective these may be at preventing disease in the baby is not clear. It is clear that there is no way that either the mother or baby could get COVID-19 from the vaccine. Because women who are pregnant or have recently been pregnant are at higher risk for severe disease if infected with COVID-19, pregnant and breastfeeding women are especially recommended to get the vaccine.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.